Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking a close look at something really crucial for anyone strategizing around Southeast Asia.
That digital economy.
Exactly. We're drawing directly from the 10th edition of that landmark economy SEA research. You know, the one from Google, Temasek, and Bain.
Right. And our mission today, it isn't just to read through the report. It's really about extracting the pure strategic signal for you.
Okay.
We need to unpack where the market's actually heading, understand where the strategic money's flowing.
And the big one, AI.
And definitely analyze that single biggest disruptive force hitting the region right now.
Yeah.
The AI transformation.
Okay, let's kick off at the headline number. I mean, this one really resets expectations globally, I think. Southeast Asia's digital economy, it's set to blow past $300 billion in gross merchandise value, GMV, in 2025.
It's a huge figure. And what makes it even more striking, honestly, is that it's 1.5 times the original forecast they made just a decade ago. It really confirms, this isn't just an emerging story anymore. This region is a core global economic player.
And just quickly, for listeners maybe planning budgets or market entries, let's define the scope. We're talking the full ASEAN 10 region here.
That's right. So that's Indonesia, Malaysia, Philippines, Singapore, Thailand, Vietnam.
The big ones.
Yeah, plus Brunei, Cambodia, Laos, and Myanmar. A really expansive market scale. So despite all the, global headwinds, cost of capital, inflation,
right,
the growth engine in SEA is holding up remarkably well. We're still seeing sustained double-digit growth, both GMV and revenue.
Yeah.
Somewhere around 15% year over year on average.
That 15% is solid, but I think for strategists listening, the why behind it is maybe more important, right? It's less about just adding new people online now.
Exactly. The momentum is shifting. It's driven more by, two key things.
Yeah.
Getting existing users to participate more deeply digitally and, frankly, much smarter monetization plays.
Okay. So monetization discipline.
Precisely. Companies are moving beyond that old growth at any cost idea. They're looking at higher pricing where it makes sense, tiered offerings, diversifying how they actually make money.
And the key is revenue keeping pace.
Yes. Crucially, revenue growth is now matching and in many cases actually outpacing GMV growth. That's true across all the major digital sectors.
Okay. So that $300 billion, where's the bulk of it coming from? Still e-commerce.
E-commerce is still the absolute giant. It's projected to hit $185 billion in GMV across ASEAN 10 in 2025.
So most of the value is really clustered in just a few areas.
Pretty much. E-commerce, online media, transport and food, and travel. Those are the big four driving the GMV.
And within e-commerce, you mentioned smarter plays. What's the strategic story there?
Well, you've got consolidation, sure, bigger regional players getting those economies of scale. But the real buzz, the growth engine, is video commerce.
Video commerce, really?
Absolutely. The report projects it'll grab a full 25% of total e-commerce GMV by 2025.
25%, what was it before?
It was less than 5% back in 2022.
Okay, that's not just growth, that's a fundamental shift. What's driving that speed? People buying fancier stuff through videos.
No, and this is the key insight for strategists.
Yeah.
It's pure volume. We're talking a 50% year-over-year surge in the number of transactions. Mm. It's not about price increases at all.
Wait a minute. If the average order value of the AOV for video commerce is low, like $6 or $7 an order, how does that even work logistically? That sounds like a potential nightmare for margins.
It's a profound shift. You're right. Think of AOV like your shopping basket size. Video commerce fills that basket with lots of small, frequent, sort of trust-based buys.
Okay.
And yes, that does pull the overall e-commerce AOV down into the $11 to $13 range.
Okay.
But it signals a market moving towards high frequency, maybe lower value per transaction, but built on repeated interaction. Logistics has to get hyper-efficient on volume, not just high-value items.
Right. And it also highlights the influence factor. The report mentions AI's role here already.
Yes. Hugely important. 62% of consumers in Southeast Asia, almost two-thirds, say AI-powered product recommendations have already influenced what they bought.
62%. So AI isn't some future thing. It's actively driving sales now.
It's a measurable sales tool today.
Okay. So volume, efficiency, AI. That's key in commerce. Let's pivot a bit. How is this focus on profit playing out in those traditionally tougher sectors, like food delivery and transport?
Yeah, food delivery, the perpetual challenge, right?
The money pit, yeah.
But it does seem like they're finally nearing profitability, or at least seeing a clearer path. Mm-hmm. They're cutting the cost to serve, definitely, but also getting smarter with adjacent revenues.
So beyond just the delivery fee itself.
Exactly. Things like commissions on dine-in vouchers, maybe loyalty subscriptions that offer perks. It's a strategic shift, trying to make the service feel less like a luxury discretionary thing.
And more like a routine, accessible option.
Precisely. For a wider group of people.
Okay. And transport. Similar diversification.
Similar themes. Subscription bundles are appearing, more in-app advertising. But the really big strategic current there is EV adoption.
Right. Electric vehicles.
Huge momentum, especially in Vietnam. And you've got strong government incentives pushing it in places like Indonesia, too.
And the disruptor on the horizon.
The really big one strategists need to be modeling now is autonomous vehicles. AV pilots are happening.
Already?
Yeah. And the research estimates that the basic economics of robotaxis could actually start beating human drivers within, well, maybe just 3 to 5 years.
3 to 5 years. Wow. That fundamentally rewrites the entire long-term cost structure for that sector. Labor costs, everything.
Completely. It's a massive shift to watch.
Okay, rapidly moving clock there. Let's switch to digital financial services, DFS. You mentioned the ecosystem strengthening. Payments maturity seems key.
Absolutely key. And this is where that cooperation is really visible and paying off.
How so?
Well, every single one of the... in 10 countries, now has a national QR payment system. And 8 of those markets already offer cross-border QR payments.
Interoperability.
Exactly. It's part of that big regional payment connectivity initiative. Mm. Reducing that kind of friction is just fundamental for future growth. It's the bedrock.
Makes sense. And on the finance side, beyond payments, lending's still dominant.
Lending is still the biggest revenue driver in DFS, yes. But we're also seeing digital wealth platforms scale up incredibly fast.
Wealth management online.
Yeah. Several platforms are now over $1 billion in assets under management AUM. And mostly, they're doing that by efficiently upselling to the customers they already have.
Smart. But there's a catch, isn't there? The trust issue.
Ah, yes. The critical challenge. Despite all this adoption, this convenience, a full third, 33% of consumers say they do not trust these digital finance players as much as they trust traditional banks.
One third. That's a pretty major hurdle, especially if VCs are pouring so much money into DFS, as we'll discuss. How do they square that?
Well, the potential market size is just so vast. That's the lure. But you're absolutely right. The strategy has to evolve. It can't just be about convenience anymore.
It needs confidence.
Exactly. Companies need to focus, really focus, on building deep, value-driven relationships. That means tackling data security head-on, being transparent, proving reliability. The next growth wave has to be built on trust.
All right, let's talk about the money that's funding all this. The investment landscape, it seems cautious, but picking up slightly.
Cautious is the right word. Private funding did grow about 15%, hitting $7.7 billion in the last 12 months.
Okay, $7.7 billion.
But context is vital here. That number is still 70% below the, you know, the absolute peak frenzy of 2021.
Right. A big drop from the peak.
And the strategic tilt now is very clear. Risk consolidation. 80% of that funding went into late stage deals. Series C, D, E, plus D, et.
So backing more proven models?
Definitely. Investors are looking for companies closer to profitability with a clearer path to an exit, whether that's an IPO or, you know, a strategic acquisition.
And as you hinted, DFS is still attracting the bulk of that late-stage money, despite the trust gap.
It absolutely is, pulling in somewhere between 45% and 50% of the total deal value. The potential scale keeps investors interested.
But the real bright spot, the excitement, seems to be around AI.
Without a doubt. There are roughly 700 active AI startups across Kanawan right now. And the funding shows the priority. 30% of all private funding in the last year went towards AI or AI-related ventures.
30% is significant, and investors are planning even more.
The intent is crystal clear. Half the VCs surveyed already have over a quarter of their portfolio focused on AI as a core product or enabler.
Okay.
And they expect that figure to jump to 71%, nearly three quarters within the next 12 months.
Wow. Okay, but there's a specific economic challenge in SEA for AI, right? The cost-value equation you mentioned.
Yes, this is crucial. You have consumers in Southeast Asia who are, globally speaking, among the most interested in AI. Very high enthusiasm. But the high upfront implementation costs for really advanced AI systems clash directly with the region's generally low-cost labor environment.
Right, just put that in perspective. The report mentions the weighted average wage in SEA is only about 5% of U.S. wages.
Exactly, 5%. So that fundamentally changes the ROI calculation for full automation, doesn't it?
Yeah, if labor is relatively cheap, spending millions on automation that replaces those workers, the payback period might be way too long.
Precisely. So the immediate impact where AI is really succeeding right now isn't mass replacement. It's augmentation. It's cost savings.
Making existing workers more efficient.
That's it. 64% of investor portfolios reported realizing cost savings from AI already. That's happening ahead of big jumps in revenue generation or pricing power from AI. Efficiency first.
Got it. And that brings us back, inevitably, to trust. Still a barrier for AI, too.
Still a major strategic hurdle, yes. Consumers are okay with AI recommending products, maybe summarizing text.
Smaller tasks.
Right. But they remain cautious about delegating more significant decisions to AI.
Yeah.
Things with real consequence. There are deep concerns about privacy, data security, and just basic reliability.
So unlocking AI's full commercial power requires building that trust.
Absolutely. Businesses need to build AI systems that feel trustworthy. That means prioritizing transparency, giving users real control over their data, and being very clear about where the human oversight is and where the AI operates. Hashtag outro.
Okay, so let's try and bring this strategic briefing together for you, the listener. We've seen that monumental $300 billion GMV figure for 2025.
A huge confirmation of the region's scale.
We've seen that strategic pivot towards really disciplined monetization across the board, e-commerce being reshaped by this volume-driven video commerce boom.
Rewriting the logistics playbook.
And this fascinating AI paradox. Huge enthusiasm and investment, meeting the realities of regional labor costs, leading to efficiency gains first before maybe full disruption later.
Yeah, looking ahead to the next decade, you have these really powerful catalysts lining up. AI adoption speeding up, that late-stage investment hopefully renewing confidence, and a sea in cooperation getting stronger. But those forces are pushing against some serious headwinds. Global economic uncertainty isn't going away, and the pressure to prove profitability is immense.
The strategic path is laid out, the opportunities and challenges seem clear, but there's one big variable hanging over everything.
There is, and that's the wild card, regulation.
Yeah.
Specifically, regulatory choices.
Yeah.
Will the region get bogged down in fragmented national policies that slow things down?
Yeah.
Or will it strategically embrace shared frameworks? Something like the CN Guide on AI Governance and Ethics could be a template. Yeah. That choice will arguably define the trajectory.
So the final provocative thought for you, the strategist listening, how can you, within your sphere of influence, maybe push for that kind of regulatory cooperation? Because unlocking Southeast Asia's full, truly unified potential in this next critical phase, well, that might depend on it.